Wow, Catherine, talking about kicking a guy when he's down. Jeez.
What does that mean?
You canceled Netflix.
I did. I told you I was going to.
Yeah, you said that like 6 months ago, and you never did, so I didn't really take you seriously. But then you did it after they lost like 2 million other people.
Yes, and they lost me.
So you just jump on the bandwagon.
I'm just a bandwagon jumper. But you know why I did it?
Because you think you have streaming problems?
Obviously, I have streaming. I have many problems. Streaming is just one of them. But no, I wanted to try Hulu. Oh. And yesterday was a good time to try Hulu because of Lollapalooza.
Oh, Jesus.
Which I watched all day, which culminated in J-Hope's performance. A stellar performance that we won't talk about because you don't want to. But I will say that I won't talk about how fantastic he was. And I won't talk about just how beautiful he looked and how good his voice sounded. And everything was just beautiful. But we won't talk about it.
No, we won't. Apparently that won't stop you, though.
Oh my gosh. I really needed that. I really needed that. It was an hour plus of joy and diversion, and it just soothed my aching soul.
Wait a second. You said you spent the whole day doing watching it.
Well, intermittently, I was like, I had Lollapalooza on in the background.
Oh.
I mean, I'm not a big, like, you know, porno for pyros fan. I mean, some of the stuff was interesting. Beach Baby, whoever else was on that channel. I just turned it on because I wanted to check it out. And I kind of had it on the background while I was doing stuff. But when J-Hope did, I mean, I took a shower. I got some tea. I sat down with my headphones on. I told everyone, just don't talk to me. Just leave me alone unless someone's literally dying. I'm doing this. And then I turned my phone off even, and I just immersed. I immersed, yes. Thanks to J-Hope, I immersed myself in his performance, and it was magical. It was just absolutely, it was just what I needed. Thank you, J-Hope. It was phenomenal.
Okay, two things. A.
What?
You took a shower?
Yeah, finally, huh?
Don't you know we're running out of water?
Whatever.
How dare you?
Well.
And two, was that on Hulu, you said?
It was on Hulu.
I'm canceling my subscription then.
No, they had two channels, like, for the different stages. So he was on, it was like channel one, I guess, whatever.
Why do you say no, then?
Say no what?
You said no, like they were on two channels. Yes, they were on two channels. Not no, they were on two channels. Yes, they were on two channels. Do you
understand were on two channels.
The meaning of the word no? Do we need to spend an entire half hour here?
I need to learn how to speak English properly.
Discussing the meaning of the word no?
Well, you said you were going to cancel. No, I meant it. No, don't cancel Hulu. Don't cancel Hulu. There's no
reason
to.
Every thought you have starts with a no.
No, it doesn't.
You would have made a great parent.
I'm feeling like a parent.
Fair point.
But it's not great.
Let me welcome you to Hulu as a fellow Hulu member.
Oh, I'm digging it. I really, there are so many things I want to watch.
Don't expect miracles, though.
They have K-dramas, and I think they're translated by Viki or something, or Rakuten, and the translation seems a little better. And I'm actually watching Descendants of the Sun. I'm so excited. Song Joong-ki, Descendants of the Sun. Never mind. Moving on. You're staring at me on Zoom. Okay.
Wow. Okay, then. Moving on. Hulu, I say, mm-hmm. as I was trying to say, don't expect too much. It's different from Netflix, but it's not. Is it better? Maybe it's a little better, but maybe it's not. I don't know.
Well, we'll see how much I miss the K-dramas of their ilk.
Okay,
you know?
Aside from the K-dramas.
That's all that I cared about.
If you could pretend to be a normal person for 2 minutes,
mm-hmm.
are there any types of shows that you like? Like, what
no.
do you want to watch? There's nothing that you're not sci-fi, you're not comedy, you're not romance, you're just K-dramas?
I've never really watched TV that much. If I ever had one, like I just had it on in the background. Like I'll catch the news once in a while. The only channel I watch of all the array of channels we have on that silly Dish Network, I watch the Travel Channel like when they have like those like paranormal investigation stories because it's so ridiculous. Sometimes I need that instead of the news because it's more believable. But really, I don't. And then on Netflix, all I was watching were the K-dramas.
I don't know how to talk to you because you're so weird.
I'm not weird.
Like, and most Americans, we can talk about TV, but I can't talk about TV with you because you want to do is watch the K stuff.
Yeah, and that's new because I didn't even watch that.
Do you watch movies?
Once in a while.
Once in a while. What kind of movies do you like?
Mm.
This is an interrogation. I'm trying to make sure that you're actually a real American.
What kind of movies?
Are you an American in name only?
Probably. I like foreign films.
You may like the Hulu films. They're not foreign. They're very much not foreign, but there are two that come to mind. Well, there's actually one that I just saw recently called Save Yourselves.
Okay.
It's a comedy, but it's not a laugh out loud comedy. It's a pretty mellow comedy just about a very mild subject, which is the end of the world.
Oh, very cool.
But it is definitely a comedy, but it's very mild. And I enjoyed it because the performances were quite good, and it was really subtle, and it was just kind of a low vibe kind of thing. So I'd recommend that.
Okay. I think I'm usually so busy doing things around the house or just in the back room.
Well, it's a way to relax. The other one I saw a few months ago, which, again, a Hulu movie, Monsters in Love, I think it was called. Not in love, Monsters and Love.
Oh.
Or Love and Monsters. Maybe it was Love and Monsters. That makes more sense. That is another end of the world movie, and it's more action. There's some more action stuff in it, but it's also, you know, kind of low-key comedy.
Got it. I will check it out.
Oh, and there's I Love Lucy.
I Love Lucy?
Yeah, on Hulu. The other thing that piqued my interest recently on Hulu was a little show called People of Earth, which is, I guess, I watch a lot of comedies because it's a comedy TV series. I was watching the first episode, and it was kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
It's about alien abductions.
Oh, you know. Nice.
Halfway through the first episode, I'm like, oh my God, this is Beacon, New York. They're actually filming it in Beacon, New York, which is a place I know because I used to live in northern Westchester, and Beacon is kind of like the farthest away from New York City you can get but while still being close to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the sticks. It's really kind of the sticks. It's a mildly funny show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Again, another low-key comedy. No laugh out loud moments, but the fact that they were shooting in Beacon and I recognized it was kind of weird. I mean, Beacon is just a funny little town. It's a funny little area because one of the characters mentions that they're going to go have a weekend vacation at the nearby Fishkill Reserve or something. Well, no, Fishkill is the name of a town up there.
Oh, they don't kill fish?
I don't know what they do. They just name their town Fishkill.
That's horrible.
It is. But it's funny. It's like, what are you doing? Why would you name your town Fishkill?
I don't know.
A friend of mine grew up in this town, in this weird little town in Texas called Cut and Shoot.
Oh, man.
It has some kind of cattle reference. I don't know what he told me once, but I wasn't really listening.
And I just grew up in Chicago, which was where Lollapalooza was, by the way.
Was it?
Yes.
Wow, that seems like a weird place for Lollapalooza. I always think of them as being very California, very
Grand
West
Park.
Coasty.
I know. It was in Grand Park.
I didn't even know that was still a thing.
It looked beautiful. Like the city really looked pretty when it got dark and the buildings were all lit up behind in Grand Park. I forgot how pretty it could actually be.
I thought Lollapalooza was legally only a 90s thing.
I think it's been around since the 90s, definitely, right?
Yeah.
the early 2000s, like 20-some years, right?
Once the 90s were over, it seems like maybe Lollapalooza should have been over.
No, Lollapalooza was good. It was good.
Okay.
Oh, did you see my new toy? Not toy. That sounds weird. My new acquisition behind me. I thought you'd be excited to see this.
Well, I don't know why you think I'd be excited to see it.
Because you always make fun of me with my mannequin.
I don't make fun of you.
Yes,
I just mock you.
Well, say mock. It's not the same thing. Is that like
Yes, but it's a little
synonym?
More highfalutin.
A little more highfalutin?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, anyway, I acquired this lovely mannequin.
Catherine, I don't have time just to make fun of you. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to mock you.
Okay. Well, don't mock me too hard because I think she's just gorgeous. Isn't this a lovely specimen?
She's very strange. She's a mono leg.
Well, it's a mermaid or tulip form. I've not ever seen these in the flesh.
Call it what you will. It's kind of a little freaky.
I love it. I can't wait to put jewelry on it and put it in my studio.
And her chest, she's got a mono chest as well.
Let me see.
Well, her boobs are connected.
Oh, yeah. Uniboob. Maybe it's because she's wearing...
Gotta say, I don't like it.
I think she's wearing a sport bra.
I'm not into it. I want something a little more naturalistic.
No, this is an abstract form.
Yeah, I'm not into that.
I liked it because it was very unusual, and the gal who sold it to me was just delightful. I got it on OfferUp. So thanks, Anita. This was really a great purchase, and I'm so excited to have it in my studio, and it'll be great for all kinds of things. You know, if I start knitting again, if I do any of the... I mean, I don't know. She says she just hung purses on it, but this will be great for jewelry.
Didn't you say it was cracked, though?
All of my fiberglass mannequins have some level of cracking. It's just they're fragile. When you move them, you just tap it wrong and it'll crack. It's like a spider vein thing in the back.
Okay, but she is cracked.
Just a little bit.
Well, that makes two of you.
Stop.
I was just trying to get to the joke and you wouldn't let me get to the joke.
Oh, okay. You're just mocking me. I still haven't found the other six mannequins. They must have grown legs and ran away.
Oh, jeez. I know I would.
Marie says she doesn't have them. No one has them. I don't know what happened to them. This is so weird. It's still not weird.
It's highly disturbing. This is why we'll never visit your house. You can't even find all the bodies that you've supposed to have. Or body parts. You find body parts. That's not normal or healthy.
Well, now I've got this mannequin. I just think she's lovely. She just doesn't have a head, but, you know, who needs a head?
Well, I can't see that part because it's out of the frame. But, yes, that would be nice to have a head.
Right, see, there. See?
No, that's okay. Oh, great. That's even. It's glopped off at an angle. That's even more disturbing than it was before.
I think it's a couture mannequin. She's just lovely. From Goldsmith.
Couture Schmore.
Whatever. What are we saying? What else are we talking about?
I'm just going to throw in a weird fact that I learned last night. Okay. That the woman who holds the record for fastest female cyclist around the world.
Uh-huh.
So this is a around the world cycling event.
Okay.
Lives in Scotland.
All right.
The fastest man to have gone around the world on a bicycle also lives in Scotland.
Huh.
And the person who cycled around the world the fastest on a single speed bicycle also lives in Scotland. I'm starting to think that maybe there's something wrong with Scotland.
Why would there be something wrong and not right?
I think riding around the world on a bicycle is absolutely crazy. It might be awesome, but it's also kind of crazy.
What way did they go around the world? You can't go through like Nepal and stuff. I mean, that would be tough.
There's a specific route that they take. And, you know, obviously they take a boat to cover some of the distances.
Do they ride a stationary bike while they're on the boat? That would be the only way to do it that would make it legit for me.
I'm not going to dignify that with an answer. Anyway, I just want to get that fact out. We can start talking about art now.
I'm glad you got that out. That was great.
It's very generous of you.
I'm trying very hard.
So what do we want to talk about? Deglobalization of the art world?
Deglobalization. Yeah. Deglobalization hits the art world.
Does it, though?
I don't know.
Or is this just another example of bad analysis from Axios?
Maybe bad analysis. I don't know. Let's define deglobalization, please.
So globalization is the process by which different cultures, communities, and most importantly, economies across the world start to interweave themselves into one another and become codependent.
Right. And deglobalization is the unwinding of that process.
Right. You might say unwinding. That's a good way, a good spin on it. I would say the fracturing of the global market.
I found this article disturbing in many levels.
Really? Well, yeah. Was it many levels or just one thing?
Maybe one thing, but it took me a while to get there.
Okay, what's the one thing that bothered you?
The first thing was that I wasn't sure if you agreed with the premise that these institutions, i.e. museums, don't want to be world-class any longer. They don't want a world-class image. Like, when did that happen? I mean, that seems to go counter to every argument we've made about the art world being corrupt and, like, money-grabbing and elitist and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I think it's bullshit.
I absolutely agree with you. See, that's a separate idea. I don't know why they even need to weave that part into the conversation because...
Well, they were trying to make a point.
They're trying to make a point, but it's really kind of separate. Deglobalization is actually starting to happen.
Right.
I think the inference we're supposed to draw is that people are pulling back from the globalized marketplace.
Right.
And that's just not true. Yeah, you know, I don't see any evidence of that. What's causing deglobalization, and it's just beginning, and it's not a good trend, is mostly because of population shifts and the destabilized political environment we're currently in.
I agree with you.
One of the most disturbing trends that is forecast for the next 20 years, and this was originally supposed to be a 40 or 60 year trend, but has now been recast for the next 20 years, is that China will lose half of its population in the next 20 years.
Why?
20 years from now, there will be 700 million Chinese instead of over 1.4 billion.
What, because of the limiting of the children only having one child?
Well, that's part of it, but the reason is that more than half their population is over 45 years old.
Oh, I see.
So they're all just going to die of old age.
Oh, my God.
So, and they don't have enough younger population to repopulate, as you said, because of the one child program.
Right.
There are too many males and not enough females.
Right.
Which seems like it could be a destabilizing aspect all on its own.
Seems like it. Wow. I didn't think of that. But another point that I quoted out of the article says the idea at heart is that the arts are a means to an end rather than being an end in themselves. I guess I'm 50-50 on that.
Now, art is a means in and of itself.
Exactly. It is through art and through art only that we can realize our perfection.
Art has no end but her own perfection, which means that there is no ends that she is trying to achieve but for her own perfection.
Right.
Said Oscar Wilde. or Plato, depending upon who you get it from. But yeah, Plato. Just like, if you don't know who said it, everyone always says Plato, right? This is bullshit. He didn't say anything. It's like reflections on a wall or something is all I remember from him. But anyway, yeah. So I disagree with the premise. We both disagree with that.
We do.
That's nonsense. So what was the other parts of the article that bothered you?
They were saying that, you know, shows like these blockbuster shows are expensive, so it's even more elitist for some of these museums to compete for them. And so as if that's
Hold
a
on.
Reason.
Right,
what?
Right there. That's what? Complete nonsense. How is that anew? Small museums can't compete with the large museums.
Thank
and that's
you.
Always been the case.
Thank you. And then they kind of segued into the global culture has become so homogenous. But now they're kind of rethinking the whole situation, you know.
It gets to this point of one of the main flaws with journalism is these young journalists wake up, they open their eyes, and they think suddenly whatever is happening now has never happened before.
Right.
Take a class in history, maybe. Understand the topic you're talking about before you actually start talking like, oh, this is completely new. That's exactly how the art world's always been.
Yeah, it is. And like the more niche your museum is, like from my experiences at the Beed Museum, I mean, there was no way we were ever going to get, you know, a blockbuster show in that little venue. You know, we were lucky to get local artists. And we were very proud of the local artists. We weren't trying to deglobalize. That's what was available. That's what was interested in coming. That was accessible. And it was interesting to the community. So all of this premise, like, oh, we're going back to the roots of the community, you know, smaller museums have had to do that anyway. That's how you survive.
Any gallery or museum is going to try to get the biggest name it can. And if it's trying to pretend like it's not trying to get the biggest globalized mm-hmm. names, mm-hmm. it's just marketing BS. It's because they're not big enough yet to attract someone from... You put that on your marquee that's, oh, we have... You know, a show from people all over the world that's going to be much bigger news than we have six artists from, you know, downtown Phoenix.
I know. But I think that the crux of what disturbed me, and if this is true, they reference the Toledo Museum of Art and their what they call deaccessioning, or as you refer to, like selling. The premise was that because they don't want to be world class anymore, they don't need world class anything in their collection, so wanted to sell it for like $60 million. So they cut loose, allegedly, I guess maybe truly, of a Matisse, a Cezanne, and a Renoir for around $60 million. And that really disturbed me because I thought, you know, and again, from my minimal time at a museum, you know, when people donate things, it's like it's a donation and it's like this whole process and like an agreement to take that and nurture it, to keep it.
Oh, no. Hang on a second.
What?
Are you sure these museums didn't just buy them? Were they gifts or were they purchases they made?
I don't know. Maybe they were purchases.
And
you
the other thing is, look, maybe I'm a little mercenary in this, but when I give someone something, I just, you know, I lose ownership of it. You have to, when you give something away, you have to just not have any expectations. Whatever that person wants to do with it. Like if I give you a mannequin, I don't expect you to keep it in pristine condition. I expect you to
do
some horrible things with it.
No,
some really questionable.
No, stop. No, but there are like donation protocols.
Okay. Well, you know? Yeah, I guess that would be, that's true. I mean, but if you have a bequeathment, if you're bequeathed a work in someone's will and says, I'm giving you this, Cezanne, I expect mm-hmm. you to keep it for X number of years mm-hmm. or forever, then you are beholden morally and probably legally to follow those wishes.
Right,
but
there
if it's
are,
just
yeah.
a gift, if it's just, hey, you know what? I'm giving you this thing. Do what you want with it.
I get that. But, you know, irrespective of how and these may have been purchases from the museum. They may have just been, you know, some detritus they found in the basement. It's like
detritus.
A Renoir. Detritus? Okay.
Detrituses.
Detritus sounds, I just like it better. But anyway.
Yeah, but it's not a word. So,
okay.
You know,
I know.
You like it as much
and,
as you
and
want.
And my command of English, it you know, like we'll just go there. But long story short, like even if they found this Renoir in the corner, you know, the Renoir in the corner.
Yes, that happens.
Why cut loose of it? It's like I thought, and pardon me, but I thought museums were supposed to preserve, conserve, you know, protect for future generations. And you start cutting loose of this into private collections. How are these things going to be conserved? I mean,
Catherine,
people.
There's a lot of stuff to conserve, and that $60 million can be used to conserve a lot of other art that may not be as high named as Renoir, but maybe even better than Renoir because, you know. I mean, I love Cezanne, but I'm not really a big fan of Renoir. So I think if you can use the money to better use, to preserve better artwork, or, you know, what you think might be better artwork, maybe that's okay.
Well, see, that's the thing. What you think would be better artwork. And these are some of the masters, like the heavy hitting big names.
Right.
And
but I guess who's it to just... say, who gets to make that decision? Like if I'm made the curator of the Toledo Museum mm-hmm. of Art, isn't that my job to decide what really is important? Otherwise, am I not just giving my power up to some unknown committee that it decides that Renoir is the most important artist and we can't look at anything else?
No, I understand your point, but my point is that if they're going to start, like, under the argument of we don't care to be world class, we can cut loose of world class articles, it seems like those articles are in jeopardy when in a controlled environment they could have been protected even more. And again, defaulting to the Bead Museum, like the climate controlled accessions room where we had all the stuff locked up and, you know, you couldn't even touch it without gloves on. I mean, those things were preserved. And when the museum broke up and some of that collection was going hither and yon, I didn't even want to think about what would happen to some of the collection because it was so beautifully maintained. And so, like, almost, it was almost like a solemn vow that we took, like, to protect these little artifacts. And
I think you're projecting a little bit here. I understand your emotional involvement with that, but these are two very different things. You're talking about the disillusionment of an entire museum and without much controls versus selling a $40 million Cezanne. I don't think the person who's buying that is just going to, you know, put it up in their weekend cabin and leave it unattended.
Well, they might.
Okay, well, they might, but...
I think it is very similar. It is like the breakup of a whole museum, but it's like, I don't know. It disturbed me. And then the last sentence of the article was like, deaccession may be more common, you know, moving forward than we've been comfortable with, or something to that. I'm paraphrasing. I guess I just wasn't comfortable with that.
You got the main word. And I think this just kind of sums up the whole article. Uh-huh. They kept using the word deaccessioning when all they had to say was they were selling the artwork.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to be so pretentious and use deaccessioning. I can't even say the goddamn word because it's not even really a real word.
It's a real word, deaccession.
Sure, yeah, but it doesn't need to be.
Okay. Are you going to teach
English?
It's
just patronizing. You know what? It's just patronizing.
I know. Anyway, so it was disturbing. It just, the whole concept disturbed me. And I would like to think that there are some things we hold and, you know, somewhat sacred, and preserving works that can't be recreated because the artists are long gone. I just would like to know that some things mattered. And it just felt like, again, it's not just deglobalization. To me, it just felt like a fracturing or a fraying of what we hold important. And maybe I'm a little raw these days, but I just felt that it's just yet one more thing.
I get what you're saying, but I think you're trying to hang on to the past too much. There's so much stuff that's happening. Art isn't about
static.
It's not a history book.
It should be.
We need to. Art should be a history book.
I took an art history class. It was a history.
Yeah, I don't really. Art history is kind of lame.
I loved it.
Okay, that's fine. But the problem I have with art history, for a little
sub-rant,
is that artists lie about their work. That is uncontrovertible. Because I know that, being an artist, I'm not an artist, but an artist lies about their work, and they're taught to lie about their work. They're taught not to talk about what actually makes them artists, but what sounds good,
uh-huh.
right? What is marketable. And then you have the art critic, whose main goal is to get published, not to speak truth. So
in
order to get published, you have to be salacious. So you have to have something that will give write a headline,
uh-huh.
a clickbaity headline. Mm-hmm. And I say clickbaity, but this applies to art critiques from 100 years ago. They mm-hmm. just want to be read. And then you the art history, which is mostly written by graduate students who are trying to get their thesis.
I was going to say that, right?
Right. So they're trying to find some thread, regardless of how useful it really is. They're just trying to find something new that someone else hasn't said. So let's look at this pyramid we built. On a pyramid, artists saying things just to get noticed, art critics saying things just to get read, and art historians just trying to get published.
Mm-hmm.
My whole thesis here is that it's a pile or
it's a pyramid scheme.
It's kind of like a pyramid scheme. There's
it's detritus.
Where's the reality? It's all smoke and mirrors. There's no solid basis for most of art history, in my opinion.
Okay.
So I don't really care about it that much. Anyway, yeah. So back to the article. I just think the whole thing was full of holes, and Axios has just gone to hell. the whole point of deglobalization, this is the quote from the article, one of the drivers of increased localization in the arts is, counterintuitively, China, mm-hmm. a country that has built 128 new art centers over the past 30 years. So let's try to deconstruct that sentence for a second.
30 years is a long time.
It is a long time. So is this that was my last part of the deconstruction, but what the jump there first to satisfy you. Is this a new trend if it's been going on for 30 years?
No.
Okay.
Well, from a geological standpoint, I guess.
Why is it counterintuitive that it would be China? It's not counterintuitive. China doesn't give a China doesn't care about the West except for two things. It wants our manufacturing tools, which we already sold them, so they have that, and they want our respect.
Do they?
Yeah, they kind of do. They have a little, they have some self-consciousness issues there. Otherwise, it's all about China. China is China first. And China wants to roll out China all over the world.
China first.
So the fact that China is investing in China is really not news or not new. And they talk about Hong Kong being one of the centers, you know, a China hub. It's like, that is, it's like, how old are you to say something so incomparably stupid? Hong Kong is as little I've been to Hong Kong. I've been to Shenzhen. Shenzhen is a genuine Chinese city. Hong Kong is very much not. They were two very different cities doing very different things. And until recently, you know, Hong Kong was its own thing, but it's being pressed under the thumb of China, and they're trying to re-Chinanize it, basically.
China-nize, you think they will?
Chinese-nize it. Oh, they absolutely will. They have the power, and they're not afraid to use it.
China-nize.
Yeah.
The Chinanization of Hong Kong.
Yeah.
We should write an article.
No. I could do better than these people, though.
Well.
Boy, we really beat that one with it.
That with a stick, and I didn't think it would get that dark, but.
I'm sorry.
Let's lighten it up real quick.
Okay.
I just wanted to talk about something hopeful. And there's this mural that Liz Hernandez, an artist from Mexico City, did, that the assistant curator of contemporary art of the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art saw on the storefront. It was part of this 100-day project, another 100-day project, to kind of focus on art and have these muralists or whatever painters come and paint in these neighborhoods. And so she thought it was interesting, and they actually had her paint a mural for the museum, which is currently, I guess it was on display. And it's in English, it's a spell for the healing of our future. And it was based on milagros, which are the little miracles, the little charms,
little charms.
Yeah, they're little charms. There's little charms. And I found this delightful because it just kind of came to me. I was just randomly searching on the internet and this popped up. And it's kind of interesting how when you're into something, I've been buying milagros from this place called Sueños Imports off of Etsy. They're absolutely freaking beautiful. And I think I was just looking for some hope or from some little miracle, given like the circumstances recently in our family. I just love this article and the fact that she's using these little images.
Is it the article that you love or is it the work that you love?
I love the work. The work. Well, the article brought the work to light. I would not have known any of this, you know. You know, the fact that she's using these little, like, talismanic creatures, these little pieces of charms from her history, from her past, from, like, experiences with her grandmother, and painted this lovely mural. And I just thought it was very hopeful. It was just
hopeful
message. Can you
describe the mural?
It's kind of muted reds, blacks, and browns, and there's a lot of words on it. And then there's like pictures of hearts, hands, garlic, corn, eyes, lungs. And the little images of these hearts and lungs, etc., are based on the milagro images. And we'll link the article so you can actually take a picture. And there's a picture of her actually painting onto this mural.
We'll link to the article so you can see the... Actually, they have pictures of the final mural as well as in production,
yes,
which is kind of interesting. Just as a note, I didn't like the article, the presentation, because they started with in production, so I didn't realize that wasn't the final one. So I'd like to, would have rather seen the final piece and then seen it in its production stages, because like I said, I got confused about what state it was. This mural is basically like street art. It's like posters you would see on the side of the street.
Good point.
Muralized, and it's like a collage of them put together.
It is.
And I think that's where the success is in it, because it's a big wall, but she has successfully translated this sort of public poster mentality into this one large piece, which is made up of all these small different little elements, which I thought was really interesting. It's words and images. You know, when I see words in a painting, I'm always a little bit suspicious, but my alarm bells didn't go off at all. I was just looking at the overall piece. And when that happens, it means it's successful.
Yes. Right?
If the first thing I see is the words and I think, oh, well, it's just words painted, you know, that's probably a bad sign, but I didn't even notice it.
Right, right. No, it was very, very well done.
And it's so well balanced.
It's very well balanced. I just wanted to talk about that because I'm obsessed with Milagros too. I'll link another article about the meaning of the Milagros. I'll link to this.
Yeah, I broke it down. And the two things I took away from this is that she was talking about, the artist was talking about using those as a jumping off point for her art. I don't know if I see the connection. She's talking about the healing and stuff and whatnot. And that's not the important thing. The important part is that she has a methodology. She has something that's giving her the impetus to do this work. And so she's got inspiration. And inspiration is half the battle. If you can get that successful inspiration that can give you the successful output, that's where the real success lies, I think. Mm-hmm. And she's got it.
Very well put.
Oh, and the other thing was, and the second article you linked to was talking about all the different meanings of all the different little charms. I'm sorry, but they didn't have a cat, so it failed for me.
Oh, I got a cat in my last...
That's good, but wasn't in the article, so...
I got an owl, too. I need to buy more.
If you don't start with cats, then I don't know what you're doing.
I don't know if that's a traditional one. Usually you see the arms and the legs and the lungs and hands.
Well, if it's not traditional to have cats in it, it shouldn't be.
Okay.
Cats are nothing. Cats or nothing.
Cats are nothing. Oh, my God.
Well, and dogs.
Yeah. I'm a dog person. Okay.